Welcome to Greek Club. We are here in the first week of the spring term. It's snowing profusely, and it's St. Louis, so 5 inches of snow and we're all going to die. But it's a good way to go. We are Matthew chapter 6, and our plan is to continue to work through the Sermon on the Mount, and then I think maybe after we get through Matthew 7, we'll switch to St. Paul, and a little bit of a more challenging read, at least in general. But we left off at verse 27, and the reason we left off there is because we are at the end of the period, and there's some interesting lexical issues here. So I thought this would be a good place to start. So I'll just read it again, and then we'll kind of just talk about how the image can be made to fit together. The words of Jesus, "Tis de ex humon merim known, do not tie prosthenai epitein helikianautu pechin henna." It's not hard in a sense. But who of you or and who out of you? You don't need the X there. It's just acting kind of like a partitive genitive. Who of you? And now we have a participle, which, given the fact that its referent is tis. It's a pronoun, so we'll probably take it in predicate position, not attributive. And merim na'o, it's an alpha contract verb. It means to worry, which we've seen already in the sermon. So I think Wallace actually suggests taking this as a predicate position participle of manner, by worrying, which I think is often how it's taken. So who of you, by worrying, and now we have dunatai prosthenai, prosthenai, what would be the dictionary form of that? Anybody guess that?
Prostithemi.
Good. Prostithemi, right. And it's aorist infinitive active of prostithemi. It means to add to. So, who of you by worrying is able to add? And now, epi can mean almost anything, right? I mean, the entry in the lexicon is about 4 pages long. So, unto or upon. Now, here's the interesting problem. It's not really a problem. It's just sort of interesting. Helikia normally means age, like physical age, years. Okay. And a pekun, that's the accusative, the nominative is pekus, is a cubit. Okay. I looked it up in Liddell and Scott this morning. It actually refers, in the first place, literally to the forearm. And it can be used, I don't remember which is the ulna, and which is the other one?
Radius.
The radius in the ulna, but it can actually refer to the ulna in a person's forearm. And so, of course, a cubit is the distance, well, whatever. It's one or the other, Ben. I have a good face for radio. So it's the distance from elbow to fingertip, right? Which, depending on your size and how big ancient people were, about a foot and a half, right? But the point, the interesting thing is, helikia normally refers to time, and pekus normally refers to physical distance. And so it's just a question of how do you match up the images, right? But what seems to be the case is that the comparison has to yield something small, because the whole point is, by worrying, you can't even do a little thing, right? That's kind of the logic. So, at least one way to go is to envision helikia, okay, it means age, but to imagine it as the span of a life or the journey of a life. And so if you imagine time as linear, then you could talk about a cubit, you know, in terms of a life span, which is actually the way Dick France goes in his new big commentary on Matthew. So maybe that's the image, that the span of his life is what's referred to with helikia. So again, it's not really a problem, it's just sort of an interesting image and to know how best to put the pieces together. And of course the answer is no one, right? Worrying can't do anything, right? Which doesn't stop most of us from doing it. Other than that, the sentence is fairly straightforward, I think. Questions about verse 27 or anything? Okay. All right, let's pick up in 28 then. Kai peri en dimatas te merimnata. katamatata takrina tu agru pos auxanusen u kapiosen ute nathusen. Maybe we'll just keep going in verse 29 then. Lego de humin hati ude Salomon en pase te stuxeotu peri ebalata hos hen tuton. So back up in verse 28, en duma is clothing. It's what you put on. So, and concerning clothing, question, te merimnata. Now, just as a little review, the little word te is the interrogative pronoun. Of course, you remember you learned tis. What's the difference? Anybody remember the difference between the interrogative and the indefinite pronoun?
Accent.
The accent, exactly right. The interrogative pronoun will always have the acute accent. That's, that helps us modern readers out. So, te in the accusative can mean why. The lexicon gives this. So, why are you merimnaoing? And so merimnao, then you can see the circumflex over the alpha. It's just the alpha contract verb. This would just be a present indicative active second plural. Right? Why are you worrying? Now we have an imperative. Anybody want to guess? This is a little difficult. Kata matata. What would be the dictionary form? It's learn, right. Here meaning observe. It's from kata manthano. Okay. Again, this would be an aorist imperative active, second plural. So learn carefully or observe. Kata, as, when it's affixed to the front of a verb, can often have a kind of an intensifying meaning. So krino means judge, kata krino means condemn. Now the problem, of course, is it doesn't always work. But here perhaps it's not just learn, but really learn. Or, you know, so it, it seems to be perhaps intensifying the meaning of the basic verb. So check it out, right? Now, this is kind of an interesting thing. Greek will do this from time to time. Ta krina, the lilies of the field, right? We all know what that's supposed to mean because we've read the King James and we've watched Sidney Poitier. At least if you're old enough. Maybe, Mel, you and I think. Yeah, okay. Now, ta krina looks like the direct object of the verb, right? Learn or observe the lilies of the field. But now look at how it proceeds. Pos auxanus and how they grow. What you probably have going on here is that ta krina tu agru is actually the subject of the pos clause, but it's been fronted for emphasis. So you might actually translate this, learn well how the lilies of the field grow. See, this is called prolepsis. It's mentioned in the grammars. Blosterbrunner actually, I think, refers to this verse. So, ta krina probably should be parsed as a nominative. It's neuter plural. Could be nominative or accusative. So, learn well how the lilies of the field grow. Something like that. Now, I never quite know when Jesus is being funny or not, because I don't know what a Galilean first century sense of humor looks like. But this strikes me as being funny. See? It's sort of like, duh, you know, they don't labor. And they don't, natho means to spin, like on a loom, okay? I don't know if he's tweaking the disciples or not, but it strikes me as at least possible. See these little flowers going, you know? It's like the birds gathering into barns, you know? I think it's a kind of a gentle logic that Jesus is using here. They don't labor, do they? No. They don't spin, do they? I can't remember the last time I saw a flower spinning, right? Now verse 29, but I say to you that not even, isn't it great when you see a word Solomon? Oh, that means Solomon. I love it when that happens. Yeah, exactly, got it.
If you know your capital.
Right, exactly. What the heck is that? Yeah. So not even Solomon, in all his doxa, in all his glory, peri-e-balita. This is from peri-balo, which means to put something on someone, and it's the middle, aorist indicative middle, third singular. You can see the ta ending. And it means to put on yourself or to clothe yourself, right? So, not even Solomon in all his glory clothed himself, or you could even say put on clothes, like hen two-tone, one of these, another partitive genitive there with two-tone. And, you know, actually, we were at the Botanical Gardens not too long ago, and this may surprise you, Jesus is right. I mean, if you actually consider the beauty of, you know, wildflowers. In fact, I just thought of I've taken one nice photograph in my whole life in terms of being artistic, and it was in some hike in Summit County, Colorado. And the wildflowers were out, and I got the mountain in the back, and it's just an absolutely great picture. It was a complete accident. Renee actually sort of knows how to do photography, you know, but this one turned out really well. So it may surprise you, but Jesus is actually right. And here in the first week of the term, that's a good thing to remind ourselves. I just love the way Jesus doesn't say, "You sinners, it's a sin to worry. Repent." You know, what he does is he teaches them about the Father. See, now there are times when you should say to someone else or to yourself, "I'm a sinner. I'm worrying. It's a sin. I should repent." But he actually offers this positive antidote. You know, and he teaches about the goodness of God, and that really comes in verse 30, right? Which is a great and fairly complex sentence. Anything in verse 29, like what's that letter? What's that capital? You know, or things like that. Anything to clean up? Okay, very good. Now, verse 30, I think here's where you get to show off a little bit, because I think the English translations typically miss something. We'll check it out. Verse 30. E de tan kortan tu agru semeron anta. Kai aurion es klebanon balamanon. Ha theos. There's the subject. Hutos amphienusin. U polo malon. Humas alegapistoi. Now you're reading along, you're going, where is the verb? Where's the subject? And it's in, you know, the second full line there in Nestle-Elan. Ha theos. There's the subject. Got the article, your friend. Theos is a nice second declension noun. And the verb is amphienousin. It's a me verb. Amphienoumi. Like dakenoumi. Right? And if you're like me, you usually have to review and get some help with the me verbs. And this is actually just a present, indicative, active, third singular. You see the si ending, and you might think it's a third plural. Like usi, right? So I actually looked it up to make sure. The third plural, oddly enough, would be anfienuase. It would have an upsilon and an alpha in it, which was a bizarre form, but I looked it up. So the basic sentence is, God thus clothes. Anfienuase means to clothe. Okay? So we got that much, and now we have to look for the direct object, which is at the beginning, right? Tun korton, which means grass, the grass of the field. If God, in this way, hutos, clothes the grass of the field, that's the basic structure of the if clause in the sentence, all right? And now we have two participles, unta, which is the present participle of anybody?
Aimi.
It's from aimi, or aimi, right? And then we have another participle, which is? Anybody? Got it. Balamanon, from balo. Okay? And both the participles are masculine singular accusative, which means the referent is grass. And they are in predicate position. See, you've got an article on grass, and that sounded funny. You've got an article on grass and no article on either participle, right? Now, here's where the translations, I don't know why, they typically say, if God in this way clothes the grass of the field, which is alive today? Now, that would be a normal attributive position translation, right? But they're predicate position, and I actually think a concessive translation strengthens what Jesus is saying. That is, if God in this way clothes the grass of the field, even though it is today, and tomorrow is being thrown into the furnace. In other words, it's just grass.
Yeah.
See? Because Jesus' argument is, you know, from the lesser to the greater. Right? If God will do that, and then the then clause of the sentence is actually extremely elliptical. There's hardly anything there. All we've got is u polo malon humas alagalpastoi. There's no verb. There's no subject. You have to repeat from the first clause. Literally, what we have is, not by much, rather you, little faith people. That's all you've got. And so what you naturally do, at least if you're a Greek-speaking person, I suppose you naturally do it, is you say, oh, won't by much rather God clothe you, little faith people. Does that make sense? Yeah. And the humas is accusative, and that tells you that it's the direct object of the verb that isn't there. That would be like a great mystery novel or something. The verb that wasn't there. Kind of like the dog that didn't bark. Anybody know Sherlock Holmes? Ah, you're a bunch of cultural illiterates. So, but Jesus still loves you. So.
I know Greek.
What?
We kind of know Greek.
Yeah, we do. Yes.
So the idea being that grass seems like such a nothing thing to
us. Even though it's this. God, exactly. But you see, if you take the, I don't know why they don't do that. If you take those participles concessively, it actually sharpens the point, I think. And they are in predicate position. So, as I recall, a recently published blue commentary actually takes them as concessive. So,
as I would expect it to
be. Yeah, exactly. That's all I know. Yeah. 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 So if you can't remember everything, so you have to look up what you said. You say, what do I know about this? I can't remember. So I had to look up all this stuff about stature and cubit and all that kind of stuff. So, all right, that's why you write it down. That's why you take notes.
That's why five commentaries.
Yeah, exactly. Five big books, right? So that's kind of, I think it actually sort of gives a little bit of a nicer nuance to the verse by taking the participles that way. So, so we have a conditional sentence, and you have to just supply the subject and verb from the first clause into the second clause. Okay? All right? Any cleanup there or any questions on verse 30? Great. Okay, 31. And maybe we'll do 31 and 32 together. Meun merim nesete legantes te phagomen e te piomen e te peribalomatha. Pontagar tauta ta ethne ebedzetuzen oidengar ha pater humon ha uranias hati chredzete tuton hapantone. Verse 31. Therefore, now we have me plus the aorist subjunctive. You can see merim nao, and then once you leave the present stem, the alpha lengthens to eta. Add the sigma, and then that second eta, the third letter from the end, is actually the long connecting vowel of the subjunctive mood. Okay? It's not eta, it's eta. So me plus the aorist subjunctive, typical way to do a prohibition or a negative command. Therefore, don't worry, legantes, perhaps as you say or by saying, something like that. And now we have a deliberative subjunctive, right? What shall we eat? You had an extra a cinnamon roll. What is phagomen from? Very. Oh, I take back that offer. I have to buy six or seven cinnamon rolls now. Yeah, it's from estheo, right? So what shall we eat? Or, and then piomen, no cinnamon rolls here, is from pino. Yeah, another aorist subjunctive. What shall we drink? Or, what shall we put on. Again, that would be the aorist middle of periballo. Now, by the way, hold your forefinger in verse 31 and go back to verse 25. You may recall this conceivably. Jesus says, "Me merimnata te psiche humon, do not worry with regard to your life, what you will eat." And I suggested there that these were just indirect questions. Right? Well, now what we actually have in verse 31 is the direct question. Jesus is saying, quote, "What shall we eat? What shall we drink?" Okay? Or what shall we put on? And now, why do you not have to worry about them, or why should we not worry? Two reasons. Two gar statements. The first one is verse 32, because that's the way unbelievers act. If I can say it that way, right? Panta tauta, all these things. Now we have the subject. The Gentiles seek, or eagerly seek, from epizetel. Matthew is a very first century Jewish document, isn't it? If you want to talk about unbelievers, you call them Gentiles, right? Now, one of our kids had a really good friend in high school who went to the, she is Jewish here in Clayton, and she went to the ceremonies regarding the dedication of the Mormon temple, and her name is Adina, and I asked Adina afterwards why she particularly wanted to go. She said, "Oh, it's just interesting." She says, "Plus, there's not many places on earth where I can be called a Gentile." Because there's Mormons and then there's Gentiles. At least there used to be. I don't know if they're talking that way anymore. So I thought that was pretty funny.
Not in public.
Yeah, exactly. So we have an initial reason. That's pretty easy. Just the Gentiles is neuter plural nominative. That's the subject. Could be accusative. But it's in context the subject of they seek. And then panta tauta, all these things, is the neuter plural accusative direct object of epizetousin. So for the Gentiles seek all these things. And now another gar. For the Father of you, the Heavenly One. See how that works? Now that's all the subject of oiden, which is our little friend oida. Technically, it's actually a perfect indicative form, but it has a present meaning. It just means, I know. In this case, third singular. For the Father of you, the Heavenly One, knows. And what does He know? That. Now we have the verb. This is from krazo. And krazo is one of these verbs that takes a genitive direct object. Not accusative, but genitive. I had to look it up to make sure. That you, plural, need. And then two-tone, ha-pon-tone is just the genitive direct object. You might normally expect pon-tone, which would be from pas, but there is simply a different form, ha-pas, which you see showing up in the New Testament. I don't think there's any particular difference in meaning. It still means all. Right? So it's acting here as an adjective modifying two-tone, all these things. For your Father, the Heavenly One, knows that you need. You can, in English, if you wanted to kind of get a genitive kind of a thing in there, you could say, have need of all these things. Okay? So don't worry about tuition. Sorry. Don't worry about snow. Right. You know, and maybe in a different climate, Jesus would have said, for look at the polar bears. Or something like that. Right. Of course, people from Wisconsin, right? This is normal. Yeah, okay.
It's just all the milkiness,
not. Yeah, exactly. Let's see, it's actually 25 after. Maybe we'll stop here, and we'll pick up at verse 33.
I got a question.
Yeah, Mel, go ahead.
The word periballo,
yep.
You kind of translate it as clothe yourself.
Yeah, or put on yourself.
Could you translate it, they are clothed? That strength of the more that God actually is the one that clothes.
Yes, it could, maybe, if it were a passive voice form. But, and that's actually, that'd be actually a good morphology review. It's from periballo with two lambdas, right?
Mm-hmm.
If this were the aorist indicative passive, it would have to be derived from the sixth principal part. Boy. Who can remember the sixth principal part of Ebalo.
Ebalane?
Ebalase. Yeah. So precisely because this has to parse, it's got a middle passive ending, right? But remember, oddly enough, aorist passive forms have active endings. And if that's not an edifying point on which to end, yeah, well, it's not exactly. So yeah, precisely because it's middle, we'll translate it just close rather than be closed by God, right? So theologically, yes. Morphologically, no.
I don't have that straight in my mind, the difference.
Well, that's because you don't do it for a living. That's the only reason I have this stuff straight in my mind. Good. Greek Club. And see you next week.